from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com. It's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We got a very busy evening ahead of us. We haven't had Susan Murphy Milano on the program for a while, so I thought I would bring her on first tonight and remind you to check out her journal, her blog. There's a link to it on our website at scaredmonkeysradio.com, or go to murphymilanojournal.blogspot.com. Murphy Milano Journal. Journal is spelled journal.blogspot.com. Hi, Susan. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back.
And of course, we all know Susan as a domestic violence expert and author. Going right to your blog, and in a little bit, we're going to talk about our mutual friend, Cherry Simpson, and her daughter. But we have a case that you have titled The Crime Within the Crime. And again, we keep seeing these and hearing about these sad cases like this, but the case of Lily Ambruro, and I hope I'm pronouncing that properly.
Ambruro, A-R-M-B-U-R-O, and she was a 24-year-old mother of an infant at the time. You know, we see a lot of these same things. It was, you know, the boyfriend was there at the time. He didn't report her missing until 24 hours after the fact, and she allegedly left at 2 o'clock in the morning in her pajamas, and that's not true.
Okay. I'm looking at date of birth, November 16th, 1983, 24 years of age, female, approximately 4 foot 11 in height, 100 pounds, medium build, brown eyes, hair long, straight, dark brown, Hispanic, race, complexion olive. Again, the pajamas, that's not confirmed. There's a large violin curves tattoo on lower back, scar on left hand. When you titled your story on this on your blog, The Crime Within the Crime, what do you mean by that?
I meant that the crime of the police department, the Miami Police Department in Dade County, have never investigated this case, have never gone out and looked for Lily. They have taken months to even come up with a flyer. She is not in their database, and they have not interviewed the proper people allegedly involved who were there the night of her disappearance, including the boyfriend's black SUV that allegedly was in a car crash and allegedly totaled, and no one ever checked on that as well. I just learned that this evening. And where is that evidence?
How can they justify this? Again, we keep hearing these stories, Susan, and it just makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. It's just total incompetence.
It's beyond incompetence. It shows that these crimes are still unimportant. It shows that, well, you know, we just don't know. They make up excuses. And, you know, the people that were with her that night, they all have criminal records that extend pretty far out. And as a matter of fact, her boyfriend has a not-for-profit for children now, which disturbs me as well. It's about being able to get away with the crime in these cases. And no one's going to look for a Hispanic woman. It isn't that important, but it is.
Has the media picked this up?
They have not. I just got this yesterday, and I'm going to do what I can, starting with you and,
yes,
and with a bunch of other folks, to get this out there. There is a former Miami police detective who has began working on the case, but he can't get any answers either. When you call the Miami-Dade Police Department, they don't return phone calls, they don't return emails, and again, it's like she doesn't exist. And now you've got a coalition of probably close to 1,000 people, based on my emails, who are sending me information, who have gathered themselves, will be doing a vigil in June to highlight her memory, but ask where she is. There's a lake, a canal, 1 mile from her home. So you've got the boyfriend's car, and you've got the canal. How hard is it to go look at that canal? The canal's not all that deep. It's about 30 feet down. I think that they should be able to send out divers to just look. And I'm going to call the the diving school down there and see if we can get some volunteers.
I'll make a suggestion. In fact, he's going to be a guest a little bit later on the program, Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch. You're familiar with them through Natalie Holloway case. Tell Tim when you get a hold of them that I suggested that you call them.
I will. Thank you.
Because they do the Lord's work, and they go out and help in cases like this. Just to go on with this a little bit more, is there a website or somewhere that we can get more information?
Well, they contact the blog, my blog, to start out with. And then everything that I get is confidential. That is the easiest. There's a Justice Miami blog also, but at blogspot.com. But I think it's better if they come through me, I can weed them out
right.
A little bit easier,
yeah.
And then I can forward them on.
Is there a history here?
Yes, there is. There's okay. Police officers who responded to the home on three occasions that I was able to learn and confirm, but they didn't make out a report because the alleged offender knew someone fairly high up on the police department, so a report was never filed. And, allegedly, he told Lily, as they call her, mm-hmm. told her mother just before she disappeared that if something happens to me, it's Christian. He's a former Green Beret, and he said he could make me disappear. So if something happens to me, Mom, please take care of my little boy.
Yeah, and this is Kristen Pacheco. Am I saying that properly?
Her at the time.
Yeah.
Police did not have much of an interview with him. And there's also a disturbing blog on the internet which involves a third person that was also there that night. It sounded like sort of a love triangle.
Oh, geez. You know, and it's so disappointing, and it's so tragic. It almost makes you physically ill. And you and I have talked about this before, Susan. You know, education is one thing. Getting the police to care. Now, we're not saying not all police don't care. But we keep hearing about these domestic violence cases where nothing is done. You know, the most high-profile one recently is the Peterson case.
Isn't it interesting if you notice, it's the ones who make the noise who get the momentum going at the beginning of the case, that at least there is some sort of an answer at somewhere, you know, some level along the line. It's not always dropped. It's in people's minds. It's in databases. It's in information. There's flyers out there. It seems, though, that if people don't make noise, like in the case of Lily, there aren't flyers out there. There's other people that are doing all this. And police just don't think it seems to me. And this is not all police, and I know this. I'm a big fan of police officers.
Yeah,
but in this department, it's not an important priority. It hasn't been, and the case has gone cold.
It's so, it's so tragic. I'm looking at a picture of Lily here and reading the story as you and I are chatting, and it's unfortunate. And again, go to the link to Susan's blog. It's on scaredmonkeys.com. I don't know what it's been now, 2-3 weeks ago, I got an email from a gal by the name of Cherry Simpson. And it always amazes me, Susan, and you know this too, the strength of family and of parents. And she says, I believe it started out, I'm the mother of a rape victim. And then to hear the story, and then to read the victim impact statements, and to go on and then see this lady, Cherry Simpson, also helping with another case we're working on, Becca McAvoy. It just warmed the heart to see someone who had gone through so much tragedy to turn around and help others. Talk about your involvement in that case.
You know, I'm always brought in at the 11th hour, and in investigating and strategizing, I felt it was best once I got all the information on the case to put some pressure on it locally. Not that I don't love the national media, but the national media would get lost in it.
Right.
And I have had similar cases just like this. I was very afraid when I went through the police reports, I read the documents, and I knew that she wouldn't be alive very much longer. So we went in, we were able to secure, as of yesterday, he was indicted today, 10 felony counts for phone calls and for writing letters, which is a violation because he's in prison. He's not in jail, he's in prison. He was supposed to serve 3 years and 9 months. He wasn't supposed to get out until August of 08. He's allegedly supposed to be scheduled for release on the 23rd of May. We are going in on the 22nd of May. Hopefully the bond is high enough. He will not be released, and he will be charged with 10 additional counts on the felony and hopefully serve more jail time. Because in this case, what's happening is we are doing everything we can so that she's being relocated. She's had her
right.
Identity changed down to her social security number. Cherry, I met Cherry just the other day. She came down with her husband, and we had a nice conversation about what had to happen, and we went to the state's attorney that day. Then she's taking the children, because next week on the 20th we have a parental removal hearing so that the boys are removed from the state and you know, with judicial blessing. And it's been good to see how much the local media has been paying attention to this. The Chicago Tribune this year is doing a series, a hard-hit investigative series on domestic violence, and Reagan, Cherry's daughter, is the feature of the series.
Good.
So the reporter is gathering everything that they need to do that. It's so that other people can get help, because, like in these domestic violence cases, it's a DNA, so that Reagan, the victim, needs a specific DNA or a prescription, a drug prescription, like going to a doctor,
yep,
to specifically put in remedies for her so that she's safe, it doesn't have to be returned, and that he can't be found, she can't be found again. And that's part of it. He violated the order of protection, which also extends to third parties. That means letter writing. And you come in, like I said, it's the 11th hour or the last 2 minutes of the movie, and you're trying to explain this to other folks. And thank God that people have enough faith in me and a reputation where they listened, and now we've gotten the ball rolling.
Well,
and you've got a new advocate for women and children across the country, which is Cherry Simpson.
Absolutely. It's so great to hear this, but then it's so tragic to hear how it happened in the first place. A non-contact order, and you're breaching it right from the jail that you're serving in. It's scary what it is. And
but in those cases, that shows you that criminal element, the profile of that person, will not stop.
Exactly.
And it was ridiculous. And the state was not going to charge this case. They weren't going to do anything.
You know,
the phone calls were made.
There's so much empty rhetoric from politicians when it comes to domestic violence and to protecting victims and victims' rights that, you know, you come in at the 11th hour. We try to do what we do here on the program and others and family like Cherry Simpson coming forward. You know, shame on the government. Bottom line, shame on them. And is this a big problem in Illinois, across the country?
It isn't just specific to Illinois. It's in every state. It's Lily Umbrero. It's her. She called police. Police did not respond. They did not make out a report. She didn't know her rights. She didn't know what the process was. There is no process. There's no understanding, and these women are scared. In some cases, it is not good. I have a lot of clients who cannot obtain an order of protection because their husband is in law enforcement. So we're doing another prescription, and that's what this is. It's a prescription of services and remedies that will help you that don't fit everybody else's, because no two offenders are the same either.
Yeah, and the fear factor, and I'm not talking about that dopey TV show, but the fear factor here is so huge. Again, law enforcement, you have first-hand experience with that. In this case, military, you know, the threats, all of that stuff that compiles that the victim just, you know, I wish, and I'm not going to, I can't share with you the victim impact statement of this young mom. It's just horrendous to see what she went through, and this shouldn't be happening in today's society, but we keep hearing case after case, and those are the ones we hear about. There's a lot more.
And I'm working on something that is a pretty big project that's going to hit the internet, that I hope to change the face of this so that people can actually get what they need, and it works. Whether you're missing, whether you've been hurt, where do you go? What resources in the state do you need? How do you do certain things? How do you document the involvement in the abuse? And that's something as well. There's nothing out there like this that I'm preparing, because people don't get it. They don't understand it. And the book Defending Our Lives, that's a roadmap of what you have to do. It tells you wherever you live in the United States, moving out, moving on is the same thing. Those are forms. And in Regan's case, what was so difficult is that she not only had to fight the system, but she has to fight to be able to leave. So it's a double-edged sword. It's very tiring. It's overwhelming. No one helped her with most of this. She and her mother did most of it. They wrote to the governor. They cried from the highest mountain. Just as your guest that's coming on, that's going to be, that works so hard on the missing persons law.
Yep.
That's what you have to do. You can't give up. You can't stop.
You know, Dave Holloway told me one time that he would move mountains to find his daughter, Natalie. Drew Kessie, who we will talk about soon, and all the parents and family that I've spoken to about their loved ones, whether they're missing or victims of domestic violence or whatever. It's so strong, and that's great, but gall darn it, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm biting my bottom lip here because this is a family show. This government... all the governments are just are failing so badly with this. What do we do?
We provide education. We provide resources at the school level. We talk about relationships. We teach that, which is what we do not do. We put the offenders away. We don't make a mockery and put someone like Drew Peterson on the national media every time he blows his nose.
Yep.
You know, that. What does that say to victims right there? That says a lot.
Yep.
You know, you've got women right now, as you and I are doing the show, that are being taunted by offenders because they feel that they can get away with it. You've got Rosa Laskowski out in San Diego, who's been missing since March 24th. The police have done little to nothing to find her, and you're right across the border where she lives. She was abducted taking her six-year-old child to school one morning, and she just disappeared. She vanished. They're all vanishing. So this is a crime reporting category, and I call it the vanishing crime reporting category because that's what it is.
It's an epidemic, and you know, you hate to use that term, but it is. And education is so huge, Susan. We talked about government. Now we need to talk about law enforcement. You know, you have the... obviously, the blue wall or blue line or whatever you want to call it. You know I'm in law enforcement, but we have to get away from the old-time mentality, that old-time thinking, and put more pressure on the police chiefs, the police boards, the mayors, the governments, whoever, to train the cops because they are the first line. They need to know what's going on, too.
But Dana, it's the criminal element. That person is right there. He's not down the street. He's not in another state or a town. It's not important because they know the alleged offender. The man the other day who shot his entire family, his children survived. He kept shooting his wife. And it was like, you know, he had had a deal that went wrong, some type of a drug deal, and he killed her, and it wasn't a big deal. And police had been out there, and they hadn't followed through on certain things. It's a known entity. The offender is known. So
yep.
It's not very difficult for them. They don't want to intrude. They don't want to cross that line. They don't really understand or grasp that it's a crime. Just like drunk driving, it's a crime. You pull over the guy
yep.
or the woman when they've been drinking and you do a breathalyzer test.
Yep.
It's not serious. We don't have a Mothers Against Drunk Driving who are out there. We don't have a big effort. You know, there's a group of us that are out there that have really sort of found each other, you, me, Terry, some other folks,
yep.
that have really gone out and signaled and thrown up the flags and said, okay, we got to do something.
Yeah, what's the old saying? We're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's that important. And to see a case like Lily's and Cherry Simpson's daughter and the McAvoy case and all of these cases, you know, we just have to be committed and keep plugging along because I think we're being heard, are we not?
Absolutely we are. I am amazed at now, like I said, when I put up Lily's post, I had a lot of people either private email me or put some comments on the blog, and they provided information. And in these other cases that I have, they provide information. I now get packets at a mailbox that I have. People send them, people send the cases and the documents, and then we investigate them and see what we can do.
Yes.
I'm not able to help everyone, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's things along that line that can be done. I still think that there's some things within the Peterson case that can be done. But you've got to go back to before the timeline and count steps.
Yep.
And you've got to think like the offender in order, and you've got to think outside the box because this person who is a suspect knows that town, Drew Peterson, better than anyone. And that's what these people bank on. They know the area. They know what to do. They know how to dispose of something. They're very good, whether they're a police officer or not, that has nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
They are pure and simple a family criminal offender.
Exactly.
We've got to stop saying domestic violence.
Cherry Simpson listened to my show, and she came to me. There could be someone listening to the program right now, Susan, and has the similar type of issue that they want to talk about. They don't know what to do. We've got about 2 minutes left. What's your advice to them?
Well, you know, they can email me at movingoutmovingon.com. Again, it stays confidential. They need to research on the internet and see in the state that they live what they can do. If they feel that the order of protection is in their best interest, because all it is a document, a piece of paper that describes the history of the abuse, but they have to think outside the box. They have to think of planning what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. They can't just say, which they say quite a bit, you know, if something happens to me, you'll know so-and-so did it. That is not enough.
Exactly.
They have to be diligent, just as Terry has been, in sending letters and making sure that the person remains in jail and making sure that her daughter is safe and making sure that the Department of Corrections is talking to the other department. There's a new law coming down the pike, which I think is kind of ridiculous because it doesn't do anything. There was a woman in Illinois by the name of Mercedes McCauley who was gunned down by her boyfriend on April 6th of 2008. And she had an order of protection, didn't really know about his criminal history. He wound up killing her and then taking his own life. But what they didn't do, he was a Class X felon. They did not read his priors in court.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't have been bonded out. You need to find out who, you know, I would back up and say, know who your relative is married to or who they are dating.
Yep. And that's so important for sure. Susan Murphy Milano, thank you. We'll stay in touch.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Susan Murphy Milano, and we're going to be back in a minute with Drew Kessie. Of course, you all know Drew Kessie is Jennifer Kessie's dad. Jennifer's been missing for, well, too darn long. But there's a new law that's been passed in Florida called the Jennifer Kessie Tiffany Sessions Missing Persons Act. And, you know, we're proud as heck here on the program to talk to Drew Kessie about that. And that's exactly what we'll do here in just a minute on the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. The Jennifer Kessie Tiffany Sessions Missing Persons Act is an act relating to missing persons, providing that requires law enforcement agencies to adopt written policies and procedures to be used when investigating missing children and missing adult reports. This also requires law enforcement agencies having jurisdiction to accept and file the report, providing a time frame for transmitting the report to state and national databases, and providing immunity from civil liability for certain persons providing information in good faith, also requiring that law enforcement agencies obtain DNA samples after a child or an adult has been missing for more than 90 days, and there's a lot more to it than that. Of course, we've talked about Jennifer Kessie's case for, well, too darn long. I hate to say it, and I'll keep talking about it until we find Jennifer, but I'm very happy to have Drew Kessie on this evening to talk about this new law passed called the Jennifer Kessie Tiffany Sessions Missing Persons Act. And welcome, Drew.
Good evening, Dana. Thank you.
Now, I paraphrased probably poorly here, but that is a very important part of this act. And, you know, I'm so proud of the work that everyone has done, yourself, your family, all the legislators, the other families involved here, because what I just read, you would think was happening already, but sadly it wasn't. Let's get into this.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, Florida is very advanced. We've had the databases and we've had them up and running for quite a few years now. Unfortunately, we never made statutes that made police put things into the databases, so it really wasn't quite making sense. And we find that every time we do fill databases up with information, we solve crimes. So the Jennifer Kessie Tiffany Sessions Missing Persons Act actually just makes us react quicker and uniformly within the state. And it is a law that does have teeth. It's going to make a requirement that everyone take any missing persons call that comes in reality and put it into databases within 2 hours of taking that report. And also the DNA piece is incredibly important. It is the future, I think, crime fighting.
Absolutely. And this is, you know, investigation 101, but a lot of people don't realize that the first day, a lot will say the first 48 hours, but never mind that. The first day is so important. And with databases, the connection and the use in law enforcement across the world, it is so extremely important. Before we get more into the act, I want to talk a little bit about Tiffany Sessions. She's been missing 19 years. How did the two families get together with this act?
Well, actually, Hillary Sessions, Tiffany's mother, we had come to meet last year at Florida Missing Persons Day. And she runs a very large organization here in the state of Florida, a nonprofit for missing persons, and is actually the largest in Florida, and I believe the second or third largest in America right now. And she does some incredible work. She breeds, and I shouldn't say that she breeds, but she gives away bloodhounds to police departments all around America. She has rape classes that she teaches young children as well as women about rape classes. She does free fingerprinting. There's a lot of things that she does within our organization. And we just happened to be introduced at a missing person event, and it turns out that we lived very close to each other. And it just, I don't know if it's blossomed since then, but we are on the same path. Our daughters went out one day and never came back.
Yeah, and that's the tragedy behind it. And again, Drew, you and I have talked many times, and I'm so impressed with the strength of your family and you, your wife, and others, and any family that goes through something like this. But all of a sudden now a law is passed. You don't just go out, open the door, make a phone call, and a law is passed. There's a lot of work involved with that. Let's talk about that.
Well, I want to thank even you and the monkeys. I mean, it took so many people. It came down to the wire. The law was actually passed in the last hour of a 60-day session that we have here in Florida, and it is a good law, and everyone knew it was a good law, and it was kind of came down to the bottom of using it as a bargaining chip at one point, honestly.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of background, you know, in the background work, getting just the grassroots. One thing I do want people to understand is that our government truly does work. This was not a federal agency taking over something and trying to make a law. We just decided that we need to strengthen it down here, and we went out as two families and asked the population of Florida to step forward and hear, you know, make themselves be heard. And they did. And that works. And that's truly the American way. It does work. And it can work if you truly have passion about what you want to do.
You know, passion is the key word here. A desire. Jennifer will be found. You know, you and I both know that. She will be found. It's just taken too darn long, and we just don't know the answers right now. And in a while, I'll get you to give the website as far as more information about Jennifer. But what people are listening to the program now or live, or are listening to it live or later on replay, are saying that, you mean to tell me if I go to a police department and report my loved one missing, they may not take a report?
Yes, and up until this point in Florida, all the cities and counties, they all differed. You can go anywhere from a child being immediate. A child is immediate. FBI gets involved in everything else.
Right.
Will stop speaking about. However, when you're speaking about anyone over the age of 18 before this time, you had to be, number one, a direct relative. The law that was just passed says that anyone can now call, and the police have to take a report and justify the report. So that's a big change, because we do have young people, young adults that are going to college here, are going to their master's here, have decided to stay here after coming to school here. They're not with their nucleus family. And that's very difficult. It almost doesn't make sense that we had to make a direct relative call people in.
Well, exactly.
So we've raised the law also up to the age of 26. I personally don't think that there should be an age. Mm-hmm. But the law also states, or any other person that police feel is endangered or has a crime caused against them. So it really takes the age away, which is a very good thing.
We talk about the anonymity part of it, being anonymous, coming forward with information. You know, I know something about this person, but I can't. I just can't come forward to do it. And the police won't talk to me unless I say who I am. Of course, we have Crime Stoppers and programs like that, but there's an important aspect of that. And I know even with your own personal case with Jennifer, being able to get people to come forward and stay anonymous, that's so important.
Absolutely, Dana. And, you know, really, when you really realistically look at it, there's obviously probably more than one person very scared out there to even speak up about Jennifer. We know someone knows, most likely more than one person knows something about Jennifer. And that is the most hardest thing for us as her parents to really come to grips with, is that somehow, somewhere, the people that know something can't find it in their hearts just to find a way to get information and be done with it. Be done with it. I mean, the act is over with. It's almost 2.5 years coming up, for gosh sake.
Right.
We just need, Jennifer is a human being, and she does need to come home to her family, whether it's for the good or the bad. She does need to be found and taken care of.
Yep.
Period.
And people need to know that they can come forward and speak about that. Now, Drew Kesey is here, and we're talking about the Jennifer Kesey, Tiffany Sessions Missing Persons Act. Those that criticize Drew, those that are negative, or those that question, will say, yeah, a law is a law, but you know, who's going to check up on it? How is it going to be monitored to make sure that it is happening? And you know, really, when it comes down to it, that is a fair question. We've got it on the books. It's got teeth to it. Now, what are we going to do to make sure that it happens?
Well, we have been very lucky in this law to have worked with the FDLE, which is the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and they oversee every agency in the state, basically. And we have been in contact with the people, Assistant Commissioner. We've been in contact with the head of the databases. They are very passionate about finding missing people in Florida. These people are incredible. What they do and what they give the service to the state is just absolutely incredible. But we do have the backing of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and they will enforce it, and they ensure us that they will put the programs together to educate every police authority across the state of what needs to be done now.
And one of the good aspects of a law like this is that other states look at it, they see that it's working, and they can take it and run with the ball, so to speak, and hopefully something will happen in other states too. Drew, just before we let you go, give us an update as far as Jennifer's case.
Oh, boy. You know, I do want to say that next Tuesday is Jennifer's 27th birthday, and that's going to be a very hard day. That's probably the hardest day of every year that we've had so far.
Yep.
You know, tips continue. It's almost like Groundhog Day to us. Tips continue to be called in, and we thank everyone who picks that phone up to give a tip. But again, we just don't have a direction. It's really hard for everyone involved. But Jennifer has truly vanished, and so has that person that we see in that picture.
Yep.
And that's a very hard thing for us to, and authorities, to really face every day. But as you started this off with Dana, we will find Jennifer. Jennifer will be found.
Absolutely.
We don't know the time yet, but someone will somehow, some way, someday, we'll get the information needed. But right now, we're still on a search of our lives, unfortunately.
Remind the folks of the website to learn more about your daughter.
Sure. It is www.findjennifer with two N's, Kesey with two S's, KESSE.com. Findjenniferkesey.com. And we thank everyone who visits it and passes it on to everyone else, because it does work. Awareness is what we need. It's what's needed to continue. And we thank you, Dana, for what you do. And we're going to find not only Jennifer, but many others in the future here.
So true. Drew Kessie, thank you, sir.
I thank you, Dana.
We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye. That's Drew Kessie again. The Jennifer Kessie Tiffany Sessions Missing Persons Act was passed unanimously in Florida, and we're very pleased and proud of everyone involved in that. Now what we need to do is find Jennifer Kessie. I sat down earlier with Randy Tett. Randy is a film guy, an artist, an exhibitor in Los Angeles, and there's an exhibit going on in Los Angeles right now that benefits kids, foster kids. And I thought I would sit down and bring Randy back to the program and talk about that, because anything that helps out kids is okay on my program. Hi, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. Film executive, artist, designer Randy Tett has unveiled new work for the Zimmer Children's Museum. The exhibit Show and Tell, The Art of Vision is running from May 8th to June 20th. It will be featuring collections from David Hockney, Raben Pettibon, and Tony Bennett. And it's always a pleasure to have Randy Tett on the air with me. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Dana. Thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Let's talk about The Art of Vision.
Well, the beautiful thing about it is each artist has been provided with cameras, kaleidoscopes, eyeglasses, mirrors, or other objects of vision. And they were all asked to turn the items into a blank canvas, into an interesting piece of artwork. Obviously, using the metaphor of vision as the artist's interpretation of the term, and how the meaning of the word vision plays an active role in our lives.
Sure.
And this will all be expressed through everyone's work.
Now, the Zimmer Children's Museum is in Los Angeles, and the benefits of this exhibition will be going to an organization called You Think. Before we get to You Think, let's talk about your work, which you've been working on, called Pop It, See It. What's that all about?
Oh, Pop It and See It is a 6-foot-tall, coin-operated set of binoculars.
Hey, cool.
It's a really fun, flamboyant, exciting piece that you would see at any tourist scenic viewpoint around the country, but exceptionally different. The piece is made of vintage tin, recycled wood, metal, and found objects. It's hand-painted with acrylics and oils, incorporating framed images of pop artists, Jasper Johns, Roy Lichtenstein, Peter Blake, Robert Rauschenberg, unfortunately, just passed away. And so in honor of him, I celebrated a lot of his artwork within this piece. The fun thing about it is you can just imagine popping a coin in the slot and pushing the red button at the top as flashing tractor lights blink while crystals hanging from silver industrial chains add to the dizziness high. While there's an attached pillbox which advises you to take one tablet a day for vertigo, peer inside an illuminated shadow box through a looking glass of fluttering butterflies, flying nuns, mirrored disco balls, Elton John goggles, and altered hologram images, reflecting pop as a lifestyle, cultural movement, generational community, and artistic phenomena. And everything is made of 100% recycled found objects discovered, at different flea markets and garage sales around the California area.
I'm looking at a picture of it here right now, and again, the cultural aspect of it. We've all been to, let's say, Mount Rushmore, for example, and you see those type of binoculars that you can, and it takes you back to your childhood, your early life, your culture today, and that's so important. And the benefit of this whole exhibit goes to something, an organization called You Think, and I think it's so important for us to talk about that.
You Think is just I'm very passionate about this organization, and as I said, 100% of the proceeds will be auctioned off, benefiting the You Think organization, which is an initiative utilizing the power of art to foster students critical thinking about contemporary issues by empowering them to find and use their voices to take action for positive social change.
And, you know, you can't get much more important than that. Positive social change, I think, is the key words. There's a website for the Zimmer Children's Museum, Randy. Can you share that with us?
Yes, it's www.zimmershowandtell.org. You should definitely check out this exhibit. It's running from May 8th to June 20th. The address in Los Angeles, which you can find on the website, is 6505 Wilshire Boulevard, Los Angeles 90048. You can also try the email address or the website address at www.zimmermuseum.org. And if you'd like to take a look at Pop It and See It, you can always check out that piece as well as some of my other pieces at www.tatonthewall.com. That's T-A-T on the wall.com.
Absolutely. It looks like a great exhibit, and yours, the Pop It, See It, like I say, I'm looking at it right now, is one to behold for sure. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you so much, Dana.
Take care, sir.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And we'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. On May 20th, there will be a court ruling in Mobile, Alabama regarding the Rebecca McEvoy case. We've covered that case and we'll continue to cover it. But what we want to remind you of and hopefully help you be part of if you're down in that area is a support rally that will be held for Becca McEvoy on May 20th. And I sat down earlier today with Judy Cornett to talk about that. She's one of the organizers. Hi, we're back. Of course, you know we've been following the tragic case of Rebecca McEvoy, and I believe that there'll be a court hearing on the 20th of May that not only talks about a gag order against the family and some media, but there'll also be some support rallies that are going to be planned and organized, and we need to get the word out the best we can to the world, I guess, for lack of a better term, about this case and how important it is. And I thought I would invite on Judy Cornett. She's a victims advocate. Safety Zone Advocacy is her webpage, www.safetyzoneadvocacy.org, and she is working with the McEvoy family on this. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. This case is, one that I've been involved with pretty much from the get-go. It was something that I never thought I would hear of. I'm not surprised with today's system the way that we have it, but it's certainly a tragedy that, A, the national media hasn't picked up on it like they should, and, B, the family has gone through the absolute hell that they've gone through for as long as they have, and it's because of people like you helping that we're going to work through this, I'm sure, and we all appreciate that. Tell me about your organization and how you got involved with the McEvoy family.
My organization was founded in 2005, and it was because of a situation that happened in our family, a tragic situation with my son who was abducted by a sex offender in 1992. Since that happened, I ended up on a journey that was completely different than what I had planned.
Right.
I started learning about the judicial system, the loopholes, and the problems within our system. I learned a lot about behavioral issues, depression, I mean, just everything that comes with the whole package. So I gave up my nursing career and I started this nonprofit organization, and we've helped numerous amount of cases. I mean, we also are responsible for getting almost 100 sex offenders off the street. And also we've closed down many MySpace sites and other internet sites.
You know, how important is protecting our children? I can't think of a more important cause. And you just said something that I find fascinating but not surprising, is that you were a nurse before you got into this. So helping people is in your blood. What amazes me in cases like this, and if you don't know, I'm also a police officer besides a talk show host, and the strength and the determination of families, yourself included, because you are also a victim or family member of a victim, to go on with their fight and then to help others is just amazing. And if we could bottle that and sell it, you and I would be millionaires.
Oh, definitely, definitely. But you know what? There is no dollar sign on this service. It comes straight from the heart. It's the passion that drives us to help people. If I got into this for the money, I would have gotten into the wrong career, that's for sure. As far as the Becca case, my heart bleeds for this family.
Yes.
And, you know, Becca's not here to speak for herself. She did speak up, and that takes quite a bit for a victim. I mean, little children usually want to just, you know, move on, not talk about it. The parents want to move on, get away from the situation. But this little girl came forward. She was, you know, deposed. I mean, this little girl had a medical exam. She did her part as a victim, and she's my hero for doing that. Now she's not here to continue that fight, and that's why we need people to come together for little Becca. We've got to set an example. We've got to make other children strong, because our voice going through Becca is going to help other children.
Absolutely. This young child went through more in her 10 years of life, 11 years of life, than most people will ever go through. And she's watching now and still helping us with this fight. And you know, I'm so proud of you and the family and everyone involved to get her voice heard, because there is this law, this loophole, call it what you want, and I'm sure the courts will decide that eventually. But what we're here talking about today is support for the family. And I know you've been working with them and planning some support rallies. Please tell us about that.
On May 20th, there is a court hearing. It's going to be one of many to come. And what we're going to do is we're going to go let the town of Mobile and the United States and whoever else is watching this story to know that we are not going to accept no. You know, this guy committed a crime. He hurt a child.
Yep.
The child's not here to speak for herself. We're going to go make some noise, and we're going to let them know that this guy needs to be prosecuted. You know, we have children every day that are being murdered. And you know what? They're not there to defend for themselves.
Oh, that's so true. And that's the whole part of this case.
The guys go to prison.
Yeah.
We have guys sitting on death row here in Florida. Their victims were dead. They weren't able to get up on the witness stand and be cross-examined.
Yep. No, and that's the bizarre part about this whole thing. And like you say, there'll be many, many, many court cases, I'm sure, about this. Where are the rallies going to be held, or the rally held?
A couple blocks away from the courthouse. We're all going to meet around 11 o'clock in the morning. It's going to be, I believe, on the corner of Government and, or maybe it's Governor and Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Spanish Plaza Park. We're going to have literature for people to come and get if they want. We're going to have some refreshments. We're going to have a couple speakers. We have a guy actually driving down from Massachusetts. He's a book author on child abuse,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to come and give a little speech. I'm going to give a little presentation, and we also have the Steve Wilkos Show, who is also covering the story, and they're helping us out behind the scenes to make sure that we get a number of people out there to help fight this cause.
You know, and so important that Wilkos, myself, and a couple others are the only ones that have stepped up so far. But that's the important thing, is that we are here. And Wilkos is so important, because there's a, you know, a former police officer, someone
mm-hmm.
who cares, someone who
right.
wants to help get voices heard. And, you know, the family, when a family approaches you about this, Judy, and I won't keep you much longer, but when a family approaches you about a case like this or another case, whatever, what do you look for? You know, is it something that you're going to grab every case? Obviously, you're one person or just a few people. You can't do everything, but I'm sure you want to.
I could help every case, and I try. I try to help the best I can, but as you said, I am only one person. What I do is I try to help people verbally and telling them the do's and the don'ts. I try to send them, you know, links, and I try to also get other people hooked up with them, a support system. My support system is growing, and I'm trying to train people to do what I do so they can help others. The high profile cases I usually handle myself, because there is still a lot of loopholes and
yep.
a lot of things missing in the case that need to be fixed, the parents or the children. I mean, people that are putting up the fight, That's what I admire, and I'll come in and help them do the fight. If it's somebody that just wants me to do all the work, unfortunately, I don't have the time to do that. But for somebody who is strong and just doesn't know what road to take, I'll come in and guide them and help them and support them. I'll be the backbone for the family.
Damn right. And this family has done a lot of work, and they're fighting hard. And anything that we can do to help, we certainly will. I really appreciate this, Judy.
Definitely. Sure, and also can I add one more thing? You said that you and Steve Wilkos and myself and there are a couple other people who have stepped up to the plate to help out, but I also want to mention that there is a biker organization, not a club, but an organization. It's BACA, Bikers Against Child Abuse. They've stood up to the plate, and they have people coming from all over. They also have 35 motorcycles coming from North Carolina.
Wow.
That's a 9.5-hour ride.
That's fantastic.
And they're coming to fight this cause with us.
We care. There's lots of us out here.
Yes. So anybody that's listening, please get on your motorcycles, get in your cars, buy you a quick ticket, something. We need you there to support this cause. This isn't just for Becca, but this is all for the future cases of child abuse that this federal supreme ruling, you know, we're going to have to get rid of. Something's got to change.
Yep. Crawford versus Washington needs to go.
There you go.
That's for sure. Thank you, Judy.
Oh, thank you very much, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye. And remember, that's May 20th in Mobile, Alabama. If you have any other questions or want to know when and where and all that sort of stuff, just email me at the webpage. If you went to the dictionary and you looked up the definition of courageous, determination, caring, guts, hard work, you name it, you'll find the people from Texas Equisearch. Of course, we know Tim Miller and the gang from Texas Equisearch and the high-profile search for Natalie Holloway. Well, Tim Miller and his crew are returning to Aruba, and I sat down with Tim a little while ago, and he and I talked about their trip there. Okay, we're back. When you think of Tim Miller and Texas Equisearch, of course, you know they're a high-profile organization that will go out and search for loved ones, missing persons, and of course, we know them mostly from the search for Natalie Holloway in Aruba. Tim Miller, of course, is the president of Texas Equisearch, and he's going back to Aruba with four other members of Texas Equisearch, but they're going to be searching for an Aruban. And I know that sounds a little bit different, but I thought I would bring on Tim Miller to talk about that. And I'm sure Tim doesn't care where you're from. If there's a way to search for you, he's going to go look for you. Tim, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Dan. It's been a while since I've talked to you, and that's not saying that we've had downtime. We've been just as busy, believe me.
I'll bet. Now, going back to Aruba must bring mixed emotions for you, but I'm sure you and your group are focused on trying to find, let's see, Jose Trump. I hope I'm pronouncing that properly.
Right. And Jose's mother actually contacted us by email early last week, and it was just a... it was heartbreaking when I read her email, and she wants help. And her son, Jose, actually worked for the prison system. He was saving his money up to go to law school. He wanted to become an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And on November 27th, Jose disappeared. And I called her up immediately. I told her that... I said, bottom line, I said, you know what? I know this much for a fact. I said, you love Jose as much as Dave and Beth love Natalie.
Yep.
And God loves them both the same. And you know what? Yes, we will help you. I says, but, law enforcement needs to be informed. We're going to help you. And, we're not going to go behind their back. We certainly want their cooperation. And, we're not out to slander Aruba by no means. And she was just really disappointed that it's been this long and nobody has helped her. So she actually contacted the Minister of Justice, and we've got a copy of that email that she sent him. And then she contacted law enforcement, and they feel as though that maybe, we've got some resources that may be valuable in another missing person case in Aruba. So... right now our plans are that to fly over there on Sunday and give them a a week on this one, and then, and of course, that's what we said when we went on Natalie's case too.
Right,
and we know how far that went.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
you know, we've got another family in Aruba, which it doesn't matter where they're at. Danny, you know that families all over the world, when they've got a missing child, they still go through the same pain. And you know, and you know what Maria said? She said she just wants to know what happened to Natalie. Also, she knows what that family's going through, and all the efforts that we put in this on Natalie's case. That, you know, she called us angels, and she said she went to our website, and yeah, she said. And in fact, her email said yesterday, my husband Humphrey and I were discussing Texas EquiSearch. Your organization is doing wonderful work, but also very expensive one. We need to know what our contribution will be. And I called her back and I said, you know what, you've already paid that. You've got a son that's missing.
Right.
You know, we've never charged the family. We've never asked them for anything. And she said, we do not have a lot of money, but we'll do everything we can. Please tell us what to do and how to do it. And she said, I've read some of the stories of missing persons on your website. You people are angels. I feel so sad, not only because my son is missing, because I feel that no one cares when someone is missing in Aruba. So here's somebody from Aruba that feels though nobody cares. And Danny, you know what, the citizens of Aruba treated us so good while we was there. Mama's talked to many, many, many people and her friends over in Aruba, and so I feel, you know, comfortable that we can go ahead and take four people over there, get residents of Aruba to go ahead and join in, be volunteers in this search. Do what we can do. There's a lot of areas in Aruba to search. Small island, but there's still a lot of areas to search. And, you know, see if we can put something together for this family. And I think we all know, as small as this island is, and this is only my feelings, I've been wrong a million times before, but as small as that island is, I see it nearly impossible for a 30-year-old man to take off on November 27th and still be missing, and nobody see him if he just chose to leave. And unfortunately, Mom certainly feels as though something has happened to him, and if so, we want to go ahead and put every effort that we can put into it, and go see if we can get him located, and you know, make a difference, and let Aruba know that, you know what, this is not about Aruba.
No, exactly. We're all
suffering something right now that one of our citizens suffered, and we're there for you too. So, you know, this was not a big show about Natalie. I mean, our heart's still broken over Natalie, and we're not done with that search. And we're there for one reason now. And when we was there before, that one reason was Natalie. This time, the reason's for Jose.
Absolutely. And again, your organization goes above and beyond. And it doesn't matter where the location is or what the past was. It's important to try and find Jose. Tim, can you give us an update on Natalie? We haven't heard anything for a while.
Well, you know, the update on Natalie is we actually, Lewis Schaefer, you know, felt as though he'd be spending $750,000 on that last search. We'd be over there 3 weeks. As we all know, we ended up there about 3 months instead. This
right.
thing just went way, way over budget, probably about $1.8 million.
Wow.
You know, we located something on December 29th. It was sent off to the lab. We still don't know exactly what it was. All we know is there was a press conference that said the items that were found inside that crab trap did not match Natalie's DNA. Now, is that saying that we possibly found somebody else or what?
Yeah.
You know, we still don't know. But on the other side of that, we've also got over 170 targets that were located with the sonar equipment over there. Many of them things are 900,000 feet deep. So the plans were with the Savetti group that was there with their boat. They did an outstanding job, if you want to know the truth, and how dedicated they were is just, you know, beyond words. And, but at this point in time, they're talking about bringing in a 360-foot boat out of Trinidad that actually has much larger ROV equipment on it. It actually has saturated air divers that the divers can go down the 1,000 feet if needed, and send the ROV down to physically look at every object of them 170 plus objects, and I still predicted that one of them was going to end up and be Natalie. And unfortunately, the thing that's holding that up is funding issues. It's you know, there's been, you know, these companies aren't looking to make any money, and they're certainly spending money. But you know, we got to take care of some of their expenses.
Yep.
On this kind of stuff, and a lot of things holding that up too is, you know, it's a political, you know, election year, and there's just been hundreds of millions of dollars donated to our politicians out there, which is one reason donations aren't coming in. The other reason, of course, is that the economy is bad all over the United States right now. So,
yep.
So even us on our end, this is the worst year that we've went through so far. I mean, our country's suffering recession, and organizations like us are not on the top of the poll when it comes to the donations. So, you know, we're certainly struggling trying to get this together. I know the day will come when we'll get that other boat over there. We don't feel as though any of them 170-plus targets are going to go anywhere.
Right, right.
So,
exactly.
You know, we're still working on that. I know the day is going to come when we're going to be back. And again, Dana, I feel as though one of them targets is Natalie.
Well, you know, Tim, we all hope and pray for that. And I'd like you to give your website information out. And for anyone that's out there that's listening that's willing to help out with even the smallest contribution, I'm sure it would be appreciated. What's your website, Tim?
Well, our website's very simple, www.txeq.org. And, you know, we are a nonprofit, 501c3. All the donations are tax deductible, and again, Natalie's not our only case. In fact, we got a call 2 hours ago from Holden, Louisiana, and a 58-year-old lady, Christian lady, goes to church three times a week. Her name's Barbara Blount, B-L-O-U-N-T. Disappeared on May 2nd, and her daughter was over there with her in the morning. Barbara was doing spring cleaning, had all her pots and pans out on the floor, cleaning out cabinets and all that kind of stuff. Her daughter went back over there about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The door was open. Barbara's car was gone. Barbara's cell phone was found on the patio, broken in 2 pieces. Barbara's car was then found in a wooded area only about a quarter mile from her house. And it's certainly obvious that something has happened to her. So we're right now loading up the motorhome, loading up the equipment and everything, and taking off to Holden, Louisiana, on another one. And it's and I don't know if anybody understands how many searches that we do, but Barbara's case is 897 cases that we have worked in just over 7 years.
Wow.
So we are pushing the 900 mark, and how many of these people that call that we can't get to them, it's heartbreaking. So,
yeah.
You know, it's every day, Dana, and I know we've not been talking on the phone here lately, and again, it's not because we've been on vacation by no means, but, you know, everybody keep Barbara and her family and her thoughts and prayers, too. And,
yep.
You know, help support us in trying to find a missing loved one.
Absolutely. Tim Miller, you're doing great work, you and your people. Thank you again, sir.
Dana, thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
That's Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch. And again, go to their website, donate what you can, because if we can't help an organization like that, who can we help? This is the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. And exactly, and Tim and his people are the quintessential kind, considerate, dedicated, well, you name it, they're there, and they're doing this at their own cost, and they're helping families help find their loved ones. You can't get much better than that. That's it. That's the show for tonight. My name is Dana Pretzer. Make sure and check out our webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you'll be able to listen to past shows, archives, live programming, daily commentaries, you name it. This show should be available a little bit later on this evening or early on in the morning, and we'll see you again real soon.
You You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.